Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
October 23rd, 2007. The Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, an interview with master photographer Albert Watson. I met Albert Watson at Photo Plus Expo in New York City in October of 2007, just recently, and this was quite an event for me. Albert Watson is a fine art photographer. He's a fashion photographer. He has more than 250 Vogue covers. He is one of PDN's 20 most influential photographers. He's really an amazing person. He has been working in New York City since the 70s, has a studio there. And he knows a lot, not only about the craft and the art of photography, but also a lot about the fashion industry and high-end commercial work. So this is a real opportunity for all of us who are want to look into that world and learn from somebody who has been there and who has learned through trial and error what goes on. This is a real opportunity for us to hear what he has to say. Now, this show really is sponsored by HP. And the reason why I say that is because HP is the one that contacted me before I went to New York and said, would you like to sit down with Albert Watson and talk to him? And I said, of course, I would love to. He's a phenomenal photographer, and I've never had a chance to meet him. And HP had a lot of Watson's work in their booth, just beautiful prints. And I'll actually run a photograph in the show notes so you can kind of see what was going on there. So they arranged the whole thing, and I asked them, can I tape this? Can I record this? And well, we can't. We don't know. And so I didn't know going all the way into the interview whether I was going to be able to record this or not. So I was ready. I had my equipment ready to go. And right before we started the interview, they said, yes, it's fine. He's fine with that, which was just great news for me. But I didn't want to go in there and stick a microphone in his face while I was talking. That just didn't seem appropriate for this type of conversation. So what I did was I took my little M-Audio recorder and I put my Sony stereo mic in there and just set it on the table and just let the conversation unfold. And you'll notice as you're listening to this right now, even, I'm recording this part in stereo to match the interview itself. The whole thing is in stereo. So this is a great conversation to listen to in your headphones. And I know the download size is a little bit bigger, but, for this instance, I think it's worth it. So if you don't have your headphones on right now, put them on because I think you're going to enjoy. Albert gets up. He moves around a lot. There's just lots of things going on in the room, and I think you're really going to like how this interview sounds. It'll sound different than our normal podcast. So anyway, I want to thank HP for pulling this together. It was really terrific. And the prints that Albert made using their printers look fabulous. So hats off to HP, and a big thanks to Albert Watson for sitting down with me. Now, I started out the interview. I wanted to ask him about the one wedding that he's done. I mean, he's a fashion photographer, he's an art photographer, but he's done one wedding. And that was a wedding, a royal wedding, with Prince Andrew and Sarah Ferguson. And so I started out and I wanted to ask him about that because I was very curious how a photographer that does what he does prepares for such a monumental assignment. Now, you'll tell in the interview, at first he's sort of looking at me like, why are you asking me about something that I've done once? But I explained to him what my thinking was, and then he just latched right onto it. And the conversation about the royal wedding, I think, is fascinating. And then after that, we move into fashion photography, and it's about 20 minutes, and it's very good stuff. So then after that conversation, I'll come back, and we'll take care of our our virtual camera club business, photo assignment, and so forth. But I want to get right to the interview right now. So we're going to lead right off with me asking him about the royal wedding, and then he's just going to take it from there. Enjoy. This is really a terrific conversation.
Well, weddings don't feature that much. I've only ever done one wedding. So
the Prince Andrew wedding?
Yes, I've only ever done one wedding, so weddings do not feature very highly on my list.
I know, but if you don't mind, I'd love to ask you about that wedding, only for this one reason.
Sure.
Because here you are, you're shooting for Vogue and for Rolling Stone, or being published in those things, and I don't know the story behind why you took that wedding, and then how do you translate, you know, what you do into preparing for that extremely
Well, I think that that's a good
thing.
Question, because the thing that when they bring a photographer in to do an event like that, there is no... With wedding photography, I'm actually quite admire wedding photographers in a way, because even if you're photographing a car for Toyota, mm-hmm. and something goes wrong, you can maybe get the car back the next day.
Exactly.
Nobody's happy about that. But wedding photographers can't get everybody back the next day to do the pictures again. So wedding photography is one of the genres, and there are other ones, is one of the areas of photography that you have to be pretty precise and on, mm-hmm. because it's never going to happen again. Now, as far as a royal wedding is concerned, I mean, you're definitely not going to get the people back 7 minutes later. So
exactly.
The actual film that goes through the camera, you have to be absolutely pretty precise in what you have to do, because the time allotted to do all of the wedding pictures was very, very, very tight. It was basically 35 minutes of hardcore time. I mean, people walking into a room. You can imagine people walking into the throne room, and at 1 o'clock they came, and at 25 to 2... and you're talking 55 people was the first picture. And then you're going from 55 down to about 47, and you have to adjust everybody, pull people
yes.
out, and keep going down until you get to, you know, the immediate family. And you then get down to just Prince Andrew and Sarah Ferguson, and then eventually just Sarah Ferguson.
Yes.
So you go from 55 to 1 in about 14 steps.
Oh my gosh.
But you're talking 35 minutes. So if you do the math on that, you're really talking. And the whole, all the wedding pictures were done on 12 rolls of 120 film.
Mm-hmm.
So the entire thing, you're talking five mm-hmm. frames per shot. So if you get somebody blinking four times, you've lost that
yeah.
shot. And this was definitely before the computer, before you could move people around in 10 seconds. You put it on there and say, okay, you know, he's not blinking here, take the eyes here.
Exactly, exactly. You did not have that luxury.
You did not have that luxury. And these pictures had to be processed and released by 5 o'clock that day.
Mm-hmm.
So they went out into the worldwide in a matter of a few minutes mm-hmm. of taking the picture. So you actually, the thing that I could bring from my world of what I did was, of hopefully being a professional, the thing you would bring to that world would be an organizational thing. And mm-hmm. in the past, the wedding photographer asked to come in the night before to set up. The wedding was on a Wednesday, and I asked to be in. The only way I would do it, I said, is if I have 3 days. So I went in there and prepared for 3 days
mm-hmm.
and organized it very, very well
mm-hmm.
and was totally prepared as best I could. But it certainly was a stressful
Absolutely.
Stressful occasion.
And that actually leads to a follow-up question I have around this, because when I look at your work, when I look at a lot of your work, I see a lot of control. I see someone who really likes, and my interpretation may or may not be correct, but I like to see someone who pays attention to every detail and what's happening
sure.
in the shot. So we take a photographer like this and put him in a live situation where even with all the preparation that you had, you still don't have complete control. Or did you have control?
I had complete control in that particular setup. I had control, but it was sometimes predetermined due to etiquette where people stood. So if
yes,
there were two blue dresses, I'd say, oh, I don't like the two blue dresses mm-hmm. together. Can you move over to that side?
Mm-hmm.
And it was strictly Prince Andrew's family there, uh-huh. and Sarah Ferguson's family on that side, and so the etiquette.
So the answer would be no sometimes.
So the answer would be no, and then at one point, because Sarah Ferguson's mother was divorced and she'd married an Argentinian, the Queen couldn't be in the picture with the Argentinian because we were at war still officially with Argentina in 86. So therefore, the Queen had to leave the picture for a moment so that the Argentinian could go and have his picture taken.
Gosh.
And then that came out, and then the Queen was able to go back in. So that was another little side thing. But we didn't even count that because it was only two frames.
Yes.
It's one of the 13 variations or something, 40 variations.
And how many assistants did you have for
on
that?
Two.
Two.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, there's one just managing the magazines, right? Are these...
They didn't have to manage the magazines because we loaded 12 magazines.
Mm-hmm.
And once we were moving along and once we got to the sixth or seventh magazine, mm-hmm. one assistant was scheduled to load two of the magazines and two more if needed. But we never got to them. So we had 12 magazines loaded because it was shot in a Hasselblad.
Wow. Exactly. I was guessing Hasselblad.
Yeah.
But
that was the most flexible piece of equipment to use at that time. If I was doing it again tomorrow, I'd probably have shot a 4x5.
Mm-hmm.
Because now, since about, I would say, 88, pretty much 90% of what we shoot, 95% is on 4x5.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, when you use it for 20 years, a 4x5, you get pretty slick.
Yeah, exactly. That's fascinating stuff. Now, is this the reason why you've only done one wedding?
No, it just doesn't appeal to me because a lot of the creative aspect of wedding photography is, that a wedding photographer kind of gets the bride on, if the bride's getting married on a Saturday, he schedules an appointment with the bride to photograph her in the woods on Monday. So she gets dressed up and gets all done, and she's there in the woods, dressed as a bride in the woods. And he's got a fog machine there with fog, and he does pictures of her on Monday and then on the Tuesday. So I'm not talking about the creative end there.
Right.
But in hardcore, the day of the wedding, it's pretty much like a non-creative situation.
Yes.
Now, their wedding photographers can say, well, that's not quite true because I've planned things where I have three different backdrops and I move people from this backdrop and that backdrop and therefore my hat's off to them for doing that.
That's good problem solving.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's good problem solving.
Oh, it's a definite art. The wedding photographers work under a lot of pressure and it's not a good thing if something goes wrong.
So thanks for talking about it. I think that's just a great anecdote. The other thing I wanted to ask you about, your first work here in the U.S. when you came over from Scotland was around the 70s, right, when you came over for...
It's very simple. I was between 62 and 66.
Mm-hmm.
I was at art college up at St. Andrews University, and I came out really there as a graphic designer with a little bit of photography I did on the side, but nothing much. Between 66 and 69, I went to the Royal College of Art postgraduate, and I came out with a master's degree in film. My first degree was in graphic design. The second degree was in film.
Mm-hmm.
In 1970, I moved to Los Angeles. In 71 was my first year as a photographer. Between 71 and 74, I worked as a photographer in Los Angeles. In 1974, I opened a second studio in New York. And between 74 and 76, I worked the LA studio and the New York studio.
Mm-hmm.
In 1976, I moved everybody into New York, and in 1976, we opened the New York studio 100%, not 50-50, 20-80, whatever. And so from 76, I've been in New York City. So I've been in New York City, and I work as a photographer for 31 years.
So you have seen a lot of changes in fashion photography, or has it changed? I mean, and that's sort of my question.
I think it's changed now, and I think there's a lot of things changed. I think there's, in fashion, you go back to the early days, you go back to the 70s or the early 80s, you might see one Vogue a year that might do a celebrity on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
Now, every cover is a celebrity.
Exactly.
So the cult of the celebrity has taken over a lot of fashion because they want celebrities in there. Because they put a model on the cover of Vogue, it sells 900,000. They put a celebrity on the cover of Vogue, and it sells 1.1, 1.2 million.
Wow.
So consequently, the celebrity is driving the buying of the fashion magazine in a way. The people want celebrity. They don't necessarily want to see just a model posing on the cover or a beauty shot of somebody on the cover. So that's changed a lot with Vogue.
And how does that affect you as a photographer, moving more from working with models who are professionals at what they do,
sure,
to a celebrity who may be trained in any number of things, but not necessarily working in front of a still camera with a professional photographer?
Absolutely. When you're working, I do a lot of movie posters, so I'm working with actresses.
Mm-hmm.
I've done, for example, Nicole Kidman for The Hours,
mm-hmm,
or Cold Mountain. You know, I shot these movie posters.
Mm-hmm.
So I might be shooting the people for functional things. And the wonderful thing about working with an actress, when you're shooting them as a character, you actually can work with actresses and you can move them around emotionally.
Yes, exactly.
Because they can be sad, they can be happy, they can cry, they can look a little bit tough, they can look a little bit soft, they can be romantic, they can be starry-eyed. You can actually move them around a bit. Models, you can't move around so easily. They're just looking beautiful.
That's interesting.
There are a few models that become, but the one thing, that's models and that's celebrities.
Mm-hmm.
But then go full length on Nicole Kidman, mm-hmm, in an evening dress.
Mm-hmm.
And go full length on Christy Turlington in an evening, mm-hmm, dress, and it's no competition.
Yes.
Christy Turlington completely beats Nicole Kidman. Nicole Kidman has no idea what to really do in pose,
mm-hmm,
whereas right away, Christy Turlington gives you body language, you know, and Nicole Kidman understands body language, mm-hmm, but she doesn't understand body language in front of a still camera.
Yes.
She understands body language if she's waiting for her boyfriend in a diner. She understands, mm-hmm, body language like that, mm-hmm, if there's a reason for that. She understands body language, you know, like this, and mm-hmm, she understands that
as an actor.
But as far as on a seamless paper, they immediately go to what they think models do, which, mm-hmm, is put a hand on a hip.
Exactly.
They don't understand that. Whereas Christy Turlington would never do that.
Exactly.
You know, she would immediately shift the shoulders or move or look. She would give you something, you know. She would give you some sense of body language within the clothes. Within the clothes, you know.
So do you find yourself doing you know, sort of model training when you work with the celebrities to get the shot you want, or do you go to just to pull
you
out?
You go to portraiture.
You go to portraiture. You go to pull out that person.
Don't work in that genre. Don't put them in that genre.
Exactly.
Now sometimes you can get away with certain things where, mm-hmm, you can help them with their body language.
Mm-hmm.
And the main thing to help them with body language is to give them something that they're part of.
Right.
Now, when they're on a seamless paper, they're not part of anything.
Exactly. There's no context.
If a celebrity is in space,
mm-hmm,
here they are in space,
mm-hmm,
they don't have body language, a celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
A Christy Turlington, immediately in space, if she was wearing a suit,
mm-hmm,
Christy Turlington's immediately there. She's in 2 seconds. She creates because she knows it's all about shape.
You're right.
Right? But whereas you can help a Nicole Kidman, if you give a Nicole Kidman this.
Exactly.
And you give Nicole Kidman, you give her the body language.
Yes.
So in a way, what you said is absolutely true.
Yeah.
You help them a little bit, but even although I might go here to the body language, mm-hmm, in the end with celebrity, I'm working always towards the idea of a portraiture,
mm-hmm,
because she's there as a celebrity,
mm-hmm,
not as a fashion model.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always trying to get in closer to get to portraiture,
mm-hmm,
rather than rely on the impact of the shot being a fashion picture. You know, I'm interested in portraiture.
That's interesting. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Is it and was that an intuitive thing for you as a photographer, or is that just something that you
No, it's just obviously analyze it and you realize it quickly. You know, you realize it quickly.
And then how is it working? Just one other thing. So you have an idea. You figure out your approach. Is the art director, do art directors interfere a lot? Or once you reach your status, do they let you go?
Well, the interesting thing that maybe people, there's a gigantic misconception about, for example, fashion photography. And you go to fashion photography and you say, oh, who's the art director of Vogue or something like that? The art director of Vogue I worked for Vogue for 30 years. Maybe of the 30 years of shooting and tens of thousands of pages, I saw an art director shoot maybe one day.
Really? That does surprise
they
me.
They don't come. Art directors don't go to shoot.
Is that because it's you or
no? Nobody goes. They never go to a shoot.
Uh-huh.
They don't go to shoots. Art directors don't go to shoots.
So
who goes to the shoot?
Yeah.
That should be your next question.
Yeah, there's my question.
Who goes to the shoot?
Then who is there?
The fashion editor goes to the shoot.
Oh.
Now, what is a fashion editor? What is a fashion editor? Here's a really good example, a really good piece of education about it. A fashion editor, a good fashion editor, is 50%, 40% art director, and is 60%, 50% stylist.
Interesting.
So real true art director that you're working with there, if there is that, is the fashion editor, not an art director. So therefore, to put it in correct terminology, your question is, who are you working with on this? Who's interfering? So just for your own semantics, because your question is 100%, to say the least, valid, is the only thing that was wrong with the question was the terminology of an art director. So the real art director stylist that I work with is the fashion editor. The fashion editor, in terms of a fashion magazine and producing page after page of pictures for a fashion magazine, the person that you're communicating with creatively, is what you were asking, really, is a fashion editor.
Interesting.
And do fashion editors intrude? Do they get in the way sometimes? They can do. But also, on the other hand, good fashion editors are gigantically helpful and are gigantically important. And it's important that fashion editors, that you are having a collaborative effort with a fashion editor. That is a very important thing. And they're akin to the relationship between, say, a director on a film and a cinematographer on a film.
Yes.
The director absolutely needs the cinematographer, and the director is the boss. But if he's not working with the cinematographer, then he's not getting the best out of the cinematographer. And the same would apply. And the fashion editor could well be applying the same philosophy to the photographer. In other words, she's got to work with him, and at the same time, she's got an agenda.
Right.
She's got something that she has to come home with. So,
well, and that's what I was thinking, because it seemed to me, if I were a fashion editor, what I would want to do is, first of all, thoroughly understand what your approach is going to be. You know, understand you as a creative person.
Sure.
Understand the talent that we're working with here, and then understand my mission as to what I have to put on the cover of that magazine.
And pull sometimes all that it comes together. Down to, we were talking about this earlier, and the way that, say, sometimes that American Vogue solved this problem was that they got a lot of very successful fashion photographers in there, and they quite simply bought them.
Yeah.
So they said, but wait a minute, I want to go to the Caribbean, and I want to shoot in these funky discos in Jamaica at nighttime.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And you go, why not? It's editorial. You're not paying me. You're paying me $400 a page or something back then, or $350 a page, or $500 a page. I'm going to go down there for a week and shooting 12 pages. That's $6,000. That doesn't pay for my studio that I leave behind in New York.
It doesn't,
it's not enough money. I can't do this. Whatever. So if I'm not doing that, or if I'm paying for it, some of the underground magazines, the photographers pay for everything. They pay everything. They pay for the lunch. They pay for the film. They pay for the location. They pay for everything. And they turn over the things. And they have one key factor in all of that. They pay for everything. And consequently, they do the picture that they want.
Oh, I see.
Right.
Right.
But American Vogue short-circuited that because they had money. American Vogue has money. At that point, they would say, right, we want you to go down to Washington, D.C. and shoot with the White House behind. We need a shot here of this girl in a red dress with the White House behind, you know? So you might do a certain interpretation of it, or a little bit of that, but pretty much there's the girl in the red dress and there's the White House. So that there's a certain, they're basically behaving a little bit like it's an advertising job.
Interesting. Good. Well, then, you know, what I'd like to ask you about is the latest book. And if you could just tell me a little bit about...
Well, the book is a monograph. It's like a miniature retrospective. Sometimes a retrospective, there's two types of retrospectives. There's a catalogue raisonné, which is everything you ever did in your whole life.
Yes.
Or there's more what I would, in this case here, is a monograph. So this is a Fiden monograph, which is really a snapshot look at me. It's a little bit of a glimpse of a landscape I've done. Here's a still life I've done. Here's a personality I've done. Here's fashion I've done. And it's a little look, and it's also in chronological order. So the first picture you look is at 1969, and then the last picture is 2006. So you're really looking at a little snapshot from the 60s, a little snapshot, 70s, 80s, 90s, and then the 2000s. A couple of pictures from 2000, you know? A little bit of fashion, portraiture, and so on. A little bit of, you know, you're looking at a little bit of a snapshot of
So if I were teaching about Albert Watson in a class at the junior college, would this be a good book for people
it would
that
be a good
get
book
familiar with
you? Because it would be a good... Let me put it this way. Mm-hmm. It's a great introduction to me. It's a good introduction. And the people should read the foreword in it because that's a very well-written foreword by James Crumb, who's a very good...
Yes.
James Crumb's a very, very good writer. So they got a solid writer to do this. So this book is an excellent introduction to who I am.
Good.
Excellent. So, is it a complete everything? No,
right.
Not at all.
Right.
Far from it. There's 55 pictures in here.
Right.
We've got, we have millions of pictures on file. So this is just a few.
Oh, excellent. Thank you so much.
It's just been
an absolute pleasure.
Sure, yes. No problem at all.
Okay, I told you it was going to be pretty good stuff, right? Thanks again to Albert Watson. I really appreciate you taking time for sitting down with me and sharing your knowledge with thousands of Digital Story listeners. And also, again, want to thank HP for their wonderful support with this and for facilitating the conversation. So anyway, wow, where do we go from there? Well, just a couple things to cover quickly. We do have our photo assignment for October, which is close up, and I want to remind you that it's time to get that assignment in. And it's also time for to get the pictures up from last month's assignment, which they should be up now. And if they aren't, by the time this podcast is up, they will be up within a day or so. My guess is that they're there right now. And it's a good-looking gallery I've been working on. I just have been traveling a lot, and I haven't had as much time as I normally do to work on this stuff. And I also want to remind you about grab shots, to make sure that you send in your grab shots. If you've got a good one sitting on your hard drive, send it on in. Go to the submissions page on the Digital Story and send that in. I also want to mention we have 500 members now in our Flickr public group, which I just think is wonderful. We just started it, and we already have 500 members and lots of great photos going through there. And if you want more information about that, just go to the member gallery on the Digital Story, and I'll have all the information there. There's a link at the top of the page. Click on it to member gallery, and it'll tell you all about the Flickr public group and how it all works. But we have a forum there, and we have reader-submitted photos, and it's great stuff. So 500 members now. If you're not a part of it, I encourage you to join. So that's going to do it for this week. I'm just totally thrilled about this, and I hope you've enjoyed the show. And I will be back here next week with more stuff on the Digital Story. Go out and take some pictures, and I'll see you then. Bye-bye now.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, weblogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.